R&B, hip hop status, true more or less, jazz classical type hits, that's the side effect, yeah, but in the R&B, hip hop status, true more or less, jazz classical type hits, that's the side effect, yeah, but internationally loan to play the best hits, independent radio spins, non-politic, filled with all types of advice, inspiration through the daily groove that bring moves, pumping straight flavor, Nicki Minaj and a Teddy Riley, so grab your champagne and vibe, meet you in the lobby, side effect support Lupus, radio blast rise, from Monday to Wednesday, Thursday to Friday, 7 p.m., so keep it tuned on the fly day, the side effect way, you're the highway, 30-minute in they cruise Wednesday. That's Jag on the airway still. The side effect way on the highway. Call 323-784-9635. We live in effect with the side radio.
Hello world, welcome to another edition of the Side Effect Radio Show. I am Sai, your host. I know you could have been anywhere else in the world, but you chose to hang out with me, your girl, and for that, I do appreciate you. If you're on Instagram and Twitter, follow your girl at I Am Sai. Also, like the Sai Effect fan page on Facebook. Tonight's guest is Michael Keith of 112. Michael stopped by. He's going to be discussing an array of topics, from Biggie Smalls to the future of 112 and why he became a Lucas advocate. So don't go nowhere, because we'll be right back with the sexy, talented, and funny Michael Key right after this melody of hits on 112. Stay locked.
Girl, if I told you I love you, that doesn't mean that I don't care. Ooh, and when I tell you I need you, don't you think that I'll never be there?
Effect Radio Show, affectionately known as 20, and the founder member of the R&B supergroup 112. Please welcome Michael Keith. Welcome to the Side Effect, Michael.
Good afternoon. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm wonderful. It's a pleasure, honey. It's a pleasure. And now, Princey, where did Princey come from? How did you get the nickname Princey?
You know what? It's funny because I used to wear little hand towels around my head, mm-hmm. and the dudes that was on the road with us used to say I was a I look like a sheik or a prince or something like that. So it just went from sheik to, and then it just evolved into his own name. And then, you know, they swear I'm royalty somewhere down the line in some past life anyway. So it kind of like it was a fitting motif for me, if you will.
I love it. It's hilarious. Now, I'm looking, I see on Twitter, you guys have been heavily, 112 is on the road. Does that mean that we can expect a 112 album? Please say yes.
Okay. Well, you gave me a hopping source right there, so I can't say nothing but yes. But yes, the 112 is currently working on another album. We do have a situation, but everything is not, you know, the ink hasn't dried on the paperwork yet, so I can't really say to whom we've signed to yet, because, you know, I totally don't want to jinx anything. But we definitely have a record label that is interested in signing 112. The paperwork is on this way. But in the meantime, you know, we just didn't want to wait on those guys and, you know, send paperwork before we started working. So we just started, you know, just brainstorming and just conversing with each other, really, and just seeing where we want to go and who we were as people and, you know, what musically are we trying to say this time around. Because, you know, for a lot of us, man, you know, the mentality is this is a do or die situation in as far as our marketability, mm-hmm. selling, you know, and maximizing as many records as we possibly can. So we want to make sure, like, now, you know, no pressure or anything like that, because, of course, it's an album. You know, we've been doing it for the better part of 17 years, so we know how to put an album together, but we just wanted to make sure that this was an album that was undeniable, and it was just something that we had fun doing, and the creative process, you know, had started early, as opposed to, you know, as soon as we got a contract, okay, now we wanted to start doing the creative process. You know, it was just those kind of things we wanted to minimize as much as possible. So, but to answer your question, we are working on an album, and it is very awesome at this point. And we're not trying to change anything. We're not trying to be what the new sound is for these, you know, these young people nowadays. We're just being 112, and, you know, that 112 and what encompasses that sound. So be looking out for that.
Oh, definitely. We, your fans, will definitely be on the lookout for that. Take us back. You know, you guys have been on the grind for 17 years in the music business. Take us back to when you were signed with Bad Boy. What was it like to finally have your music played on the radio? And what was the overall feeling of seeing that everything that you've worked hard for has now been realized, your dream has been realized?
It was one of the most amazing, scariest feelings that you could possibly have. You know, I attribute it to you, you know, having sex for the first time. just the weirdest, most pleasant feeling thing on the planet Earth, man. Like, you don't know what you're doing, and you don't know what to anticipate. You know, you just know when it happens. It feels good. So that's kind of like with our first record, you know, it's actually, I don't know if you remember the Five Heartbeats, and when they were all sitting at the crib, and then when the music came on, and you know, they were jumping up and down. Like, I can remember the first time we heard Only You, which was our first single. We were at the studio actually finishing up recording the first album, and like it was a receptionist at the front door of Daddy's House Studios that we were at, and she ran like as fast as she could to the room that we were in. She was like, yo, they're playing y'all record on Hot 97 right now. So we all ran, and we heard it, and we were jumping up and down. It was a really amazing feeling because, you know, it's moments like that that people don't capture, and I wish that we had Twitter and all those social medias at that point where they could see just the genuine, you know, just the genuine appreciation and love that we had for, you know, the music and each other to where, like, you know, the simplest thing is as a record being put on the radio, just being that amazing. It was an awesome feeling, and we just were amazed and just happy about what was going on.
The first single, Only You, you guys worked with iconic hip hop artist Biggie Smalls. What was that like?
Big was one of the most creative lyrical geniuses that we had the pleasure of just being around. And first of all, it was just such a tragedy that we lost someone so gifted and so young. You know, a lot of people didn't realize Big was only 24 when he died. And it was just such a loss of life, and you know, in so many ways, you know, he was a family man. He was a, you know, he was a lot of things, but more so than anything, he was a good-hearted person. You know, aside from what his persona was in the music industry, I know this dude to have been a good dude. You know, and he was a kind-hearted person. He was someone that, you know, would have given, you know, anything to someone. It's been plenty of times where we were on the streets and you know, he's seen somebody, a homeless person, and they'll ask for money and he'll give them $100. And, you know, it was just that kind of thing. And it's just, those were the things that people didn't see. And, you know, they automatically assumed that because of his rap lyrics and things of this nature, that he was just this, you know, this bully of a dude, and, you know, just this cutthroat dude that just did not understand what it meant to be a family man. And that was quite the contrary from the dude that we knew. He was a family man. He was a lover of music and a lover of people. And it was reflected upon when you seen him and you spoke to him in person, you know. And once again, it was tragic. But for him to jump on the record, it kind of catapulted our category, which is hip hop and R&B, because a lot of R&B art acts were unable to cross over to that hip hop side until Mary J. Blige and like 112 came into the fold. Like, you know, if you remember R&B acts back before 112 came onto the scene, they couldn't cross over to that hip hop side where they were playing or they were singing along with up tempo beats. You know, it's regular. You know, it's commonplace now, but back then in the 90s, you know, it was corny for an R&B group to try to sing over some hip hop records. You know what I mean? So the Big was instrumental in helping us and allowing us to cross over into that threshold where it was widely accepted that 112 could sing over, you know, hip hop beats, and we could still sing R&B as well. So, you know, we kind of owed that to him, you know, in that respect, as far as, you know, helping us create our own niche and our own genre. But just being around Big, he was just, like I said, he exemplified excellence, and, you know, he was just a genius. And I never seen a dude pick up a pen or nothing. You know, he was sitting and listening to everybody's stories and these stories and things. And, you know, you hear these rappers nowadays talk, you know, and they take pride in the fact that they don't write anything down and, you know, yada, yada, yada. You know, Big was doing that back, you know, back in the 90s and stuff, man, you know. So, you know, this is the kind of dude, that's the kind of genius that he possessed. And we, you know, we're all the lesser for it by him not being here.
You were part of the Bad Boy roster. You guys left Bad Boy in 2002. Why did you guys leave Bad Boy, and what is your relationship with P. Diddy right now?
The reason why we left Bad Boy is because, honestly, we felt like we were unable to go to a higher level when by staying at Bad Boy, you know. And that's no disrespect to anybody or any situation, but we felt like we were fighting against the label as far as us going to the next level, you know. When the time came for us to re-up on our contract to either sign with Bad Boy or to leave, we felt like the best way for us to maximize 112's potential and go to that next level was to leave and go somewhere else. And Def Jam provided us with the best opportunity at that time to make those dreams and aspirations come true. So the reason why we left is because, you know, we really wanted to go to that next level. We wanted to go to that Boyz II Men and Jodeci threshold where there's no question about these dudes' niche in life. You know, their legacy is in stone at this point. You know who Boyz II Men are. You know, you know who Jodeci is. You know, and 112, in a lot of people's minds, still have not proven themselves. And I know that sounds crazy as all get out, but to this point, 112 has still not proven themselves, you know, to the masses that we are this generation's New Edition. We are this generation's Boyz II Men. We are this generation's Jodeci. And we're not looked upon as that. So we wanted to make sure that, if anything else, we were the quintessential R&B group for the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, we still have that point to prove, man. So that's why we're going as hard as we're going, and that's the reason why, you know, we felt like we had to leave. And the second question was, I'm sorry.
What is your relationship with P. Diddy now?
Our relationship is cool. You know, it wasn't amicable when we left. You know, it was some hurt feelings involved, and rightfully so. You know, we began with Puff, you know, and we helped start Bad Boy with Puff. And so, you know, he was kind of hurt that he was losing one of, you know, his most successful acts. So, but he understood that, you know, we felt like the best thing for us to do was to, you know, separate and go to, so we could go to another level. And, you know, after a while, you know, after years had passed or whatever, we see each other again and, you know, spoke and, you know, everything was still good. But, you know, there was definitely hurt feelings involved at the time. But, you know, he's gone on to greater success, and I wish nothing but the best for him and his family and things of this nature. Matter of fact, his sister was at the show that we just did in B.B. King's in New York. And so, you know, you and myself were in Miami about 6 months ago, and his mom invited us over to the house to eat. And, you know, it was, you know, it's just that type of environment because he understood that. It was no hurt feelings involved on our end. You know, we weren't trying to hurt his feelings. We weren't trying to make him feel some kind of way. We just felt like as grown men and as businessmen, the best thing for us to do was to, you know, in a different direction. And eventually he understood that, you know, 112 was some good guys, man. And there was no malicious intent, you know, with us leaving or anything like that. And I think over time he understood that, but it was still some hurt feelings. Like, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, there weren't hurt feelings involved and things of this nature on both sides. Time heals. Time definitely heals. And we're all the better for it. You know, we're better businessmen. We definitely know what loyalty is and what it means to actually be loyal to the situation. And even to our detriment, 112 has been, you know, very loyal to both situations, at Bad Boy and at Def Jam. And we felt like we gave it our all, and, you know, in both situations, and nobody can look back and say, hey, man, you know, hold their head down and say, look, we didn't give it our best. We gave it our absolute best in both situations. And I think once people sat back and realized it, they understood that 112 was not trying to be greedy or trying to do anything other than just get their just due. And we felt like leaving was the best way to, you know, to do that at that time. And, but, you know, just for the record, we never really wanted to leave Bad Boy. We never really did. But the reason why we left was because of the contract that we signed was like a production deal / contract through Bad Boy, and we were unable to maximize our potential financially and otherwise with that production deal still hanging over our heads. So we tried to work it out. It just didn't work out, so we just, you know, decided to make a move.
What advice would you give to those that are artists coming in looking for record deals with what you guys have gone through with Bad Boy and different things that you've gone through within the industry, business-wise? What advice would you give to those that are seeking a record deal? What should they look out for to protect themselves?
I would say that the most important thing for new artists to do is to have their foundation in order, meaning your management is in order, your lawyers are in order, and your business managers are in order. You know, all those people are in place, and you listen to them because they are there, you know, for you, and they are there to protect your interest. You know, and that may not coincide with what the label best interest is as far as you are concerned. So if you have these people in place, I would say utilize them to the best of your ability. I would also say acclimate yourself as much as you possibly can with the industry. There is so many books out. There is so much material. There are so many things on the internet that are at your disposal that you can find, and to help you get more acclimated to what you are going to be involved with and going to experience being in this music industry. You know, and a lot of that information wasn't afforded to 112 at the time, and so we had to learn by, you know, it was, you know, learn on the fly, you know. So nowadays, it's no excuse whatsoever for young people to get into the music industry and be totally oblivious to what is going on. So I would suggest that, you know, you learn as much as you possibly can with, you know, the industry, because there is so much out there that we are not privy to, and by the time we find out about it, it's a little too late. You've missed out on so many dollars, and you probably signed your publishing away, and it's not necessary. And, you know, it's just all these different things that could happen, and could have been avoided had you done the proper research, and had you listened to your lawyers, had you listened to your manager, had you listened to your business manager. I would say the first advance that you get is that you hold on to your money. You know, don't go buy your mother a house off the first advance. You know, you can't, you will not be able to. You know, I attribute it to this. Whenever I see some people and they ask another person for money, and then they'll come to me and like, Mike, how did you deal with it when you was coming up? You know, how did you, you know, stop people, your cousins, you know, from way back that you haven't spoken to in 20 years, but all of a sudden now they need you. You know, like, how did you prevent them from doing that? And, you know, I always, the analogy I give them is, if I'm hanging off a cliff, and I got you by an arm, how in the world am I going to help you up? And I'm still hanging on this cliff as well with you, you know. So it's like I can't do that. I gotta make sure that, you know, my interest and what's going on with me is secure first before I can even attempt to help somebody. And the sad thing is, a lot of us are unaware that or believe that, you know, this money is going to last forever. This money is not going to last forever. You know, and so you have to save as much as you possibly can. And I'm not even talking about investments or anything that's like, you know, things that make. I'm just saying save money. You know, and just if you can do without that big chain, you can do without that big gold chain with the diamonds and the Rolex, and you can do without all that, man. You're still, you know, that material should not make you. You know, it should not say, you know, it should not say, you know, who you are. You know. And it's just really sad that a lot of us are, you know, are ignorant to what is really the things that you need in order to be successful in this industry. And it's a very simple concept. Save your money. Like, it can't get any simpler than that, you know. Of course, you know, it's your money, do whatever you want to, and you should enjoy yourself. But at the same time, let's not live above our means. You know what I mean? Like, if you can do without buying a $1 million home, and you can go get you a brownstone for $230, go do that. You know, like, let's do that. Own that house flat out, as opposed to, you know, buying 4 and 5 houses that you won't be able to, you know, pay your mortgage on, you know, 5 years from now, because your album didn't sell the way that you thought it was going to sell. And we're not really teaching these young people that, man. You know, and of course it's entertainment, and we're doing all this to glorify, you know, the higher, you know, the greater things in life, the, you know, the high quality of life and stuff like that. And so, you know, it would be hypocritical of me to say that, you know, you shouldn't, you know, indulge in what it is that you're glorifying, but at the same time, just make sure that you understand that's the entertainment side of it. The reality side of it is, you might not even make a tenth of what you're saying that you're making. So what you need to do is save that money as much as you possibly can. And when you get to your 30s and your 40s, you're not worrying about, you know, what your next, where your next check is coming from, or, ooh, you know, what another. You know what I mean? So and you can go get an IRA and let that sit until you're 65, and then, you know, you'll be straight for life. Those are the kind of things, and those are simple moves. Those are very simple moves. It's nothing that you need, you know, to have a business manager, you know, look over annually or anything like that. Just put a lump sum of money away in an IRA somewhere and just leave it alone until you're in your 60s and whatnot, man. Those are simple things. This is not rocket science, and you know, it's just simple things that we need to do to prepare ourselves for that inevitability, which is that eventually your record sales aren't going to be as prominent as they once were, and you're going to have to save some money.
Great advice. I know that you've been a philanthropist for a while, and you recently partnered with the Lupus Foundation. Now, first, I want to say thank you for all that you've done to raise awareness regarding lupus, a disease that I suffer from, but 1.5 million other people suffer from as well. How did you get involved with raising awareness and the Lupus Foundation?
Well, the reason why I got involved with lupus is, unfortunately, my mother suffers from lupus. And she was diagnosed about 9 years ago. And like so many other people that are involved or that are around lupus or, you know, that have someone that has lupus, I was unaware, you know. I was really unaware of what was going on. Like, I was like, Ma, you know, like, what's going on? Are you, what you trying to tell us? Are you checking out? Like, what's going on? You know, do we need to prepare? Like, what's on? So, because I was unaware. I was just really not sure of what was going on. And so I had to acclimate myself. I had to learn, you know, and then spoke with my mother. And, you know, she sat us all down and, you know, just let us know, like, you know, it's not a death sentence. And that's the thing that I wanted to, you know, to help get the message out as far as that is concerned, that it's not a death sentence. You know, but you do have to take care of yourself. You know, you can live a long life, you know, with lupus. It's just your support system, it needs to be at an all-time high. And the one thing that I have learned over the years of me, you know, being associated with lupus is, like, most warriors of lupus, they say that, you know, they feel alone and they feel like they're doing it on their own and nobody really truly understands unless you have lupus. And, you know, so the support system has to be there. And it's not enough unification as far as the programs that are out that are available. You know, with cancer, it's like it's 1-800-whatever. And, you know, you can talk to somebody 24-hour. You know, it's all those different things. But then here comes lupus. You know, one of the more not widely known diseases, autoimmune diseases, and in there's not enough unification to, you know, where somebody who has lupus or who may think that they have lupus, you know, they don't have the 24-hour, you know, chat rooms that they can talk with other people, that, you know, just to keep it moving, you know, just to know that you're not doing it alone. And once I got into the spreading awareness aspect of it, that's when I realized that there's not enough unification. So I have to do what I got to do in order to, you know, help remedy that situation. And being, you know, a musician and having a platform that I have, I have the greatest platform, you know, in order to get that word out and to spread that awareness as much as I possibly can, because ultimately I want a cure. I want a cure for my mother.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just as simple as that, you know. And so whatever we got to do, we've got to raise money. And, you know, if that's, you know, what it takes, then, you know, damn it, that's what I'm going to do. So that's pretty much the nuts and bolts of it. You know, there's no grand scheme or there's no, you know, ulterior motives or anything. You know, because so many celebrities, they take their celebrity and, you know, if it's, okay, whatever the sexy call is, you know, for that time or whatever, I want to jump on that and then I'm done, you know. So that's the thing, you know, and I'm just really not into all that. What I'm about is trying to save my mother, and it's just as simple as that, you know. And if I can help some other people on the way, then so be it, you know, that's what I'm going to do. But the more people that I meet that are affected with lupus, the more rich and the more satisfying and the more fulfilling and the more I know that this is God's work, you know, that he's using me as a vessel in order for me to get out and get this word out, because there are so many people, so many walks of life, so many different people, and they are just the most absolute, you know, greatest people. And
and
that's the one thing that I have learned as well, is like people with lupus, they don't want your pity, you know?
Right.
They don't want your pity.
Absolutely. Just support.
Absolutely.
What advice would you give to someone who has a family member or friend who is stricken with lupus? Besides support, but what else would you tell them that they should do?
I would say education. Education is like you know, the utmost, you know, just acclimating yourself, because the thing that, you know, we were in panic mode because we just did not know what lupus was. We didn't know if it was contagious.
Right.
We didn't know if, you know, it was just all these different things that were going on in our heads. And, you know, our family is a very tight-knit family, so we was up in arms, you know. It was just the craziest thing for us, you know, for our mother, you know, because you feel like your mother is a robot or made out of stone or something, and, you know, and nothing will ever happen to her. And then all of a sudden she tells us that, you know, she has this autoimmune disease, and we're like, Mom, what the hell is that? You know, and so we started, like, you know, panicking and worrying and praying and all this different stuff. And, you know, once, you know, all the panic settled, And we started, like, you know, being rational about the situation. We started learning more. And then we realized that, you know, this is something that is very manageable, and she could, you know, could make it, you know, she can live a long, you know, and very fruitful life, you know, even with this debilitating disease. So we just had to, you know, just educate ourselves more. And that's what I would suggest, aside from the support. And, of course, you know, donations to, you know, the Lupus Foundation and things of this nature, more money, you know, definitely, you know, helps. I mean, of course, that goes without saying. But it just on a personal level, just the support and educating yourself and just spreading that awareness to yourself, you know, and to others, it is very important and very paramount in order for us to find a cure. Because, you know, without it, you know, you're going to be like how we were, you know, when it initially started, which was, you know, just unaware of what, you know, what really goes on. It is of the utmost importance that we educate ourselves as much as we possibly can.
You have a column in Vibe magazine called I'm Just Saying. Tell us about that. Tell us how did you hook up with Vibe magazine, and what is this column about?
Okay, I started actually the I'm Just Saying column is an offshoot of my first column that I had on MySpace. I don't know if you remember MySpace, but So we actually, on the 112 page on MySpace, there was a little section that I had, and it was actually called Ask Uncle Princey. And it was just me being silly and just, you know, just trying to get more people to come to our site to see pictures and things of this nature. And I mentioned one time, I said, hey, I'll even do an advice column, and I'll call it, oh, I don't know, Ask Uncle Princey. And from that point, you know, people were asking me, where this column is? Where did Ask Uncle Prince come? If not me not thinking that, you know, they were going to take it that seriously. But a lot of people were like, hey, I got some, you know, I got a question. Like, what do you think about this dude? You know, and it just turned into, like, I never really wanted it to be an advice column for, you know, relationships and things of this nature, because, you know, clearly I was not one of those ones, you know, that could tell anybody about a relationship. You know, as bad as I was at that point when it came to that, man. So, you know, I was just messing around. But, you know, people was asking me questions. What do you think about if my dude says this and da-da-da-da-da? I'm like, well, if he said that, then that's exactly what he meant. You know, and it just went from there, and then they would give me feedback. I like your answer. Thank you so much. It really helped me. And and I'm like, you know, are they taking this seriously? Like, you know, because I'm just fooling around, you know, still. Like, I'm like, I know they're not taking this seriously. So, you know, I did it every week, you know, and I just kept it moving. And then I started to realize, you know, I started gaining a following with it. And more people were reading my column on the MySpace page than they were actually visiting the page for 112 stuff. So I'm like, wait a minute. I might be catching on to something, you know. And so I wanted to create my own little, you know, entity within, you know, the website. So Ask Uncle Prince was created. And it went on for about 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, I honestly just got bored with it. And then, and then 112 at that point was fading. We were, you know, going into our own, you know, sabbatical. And we just decided to, you know, make a move. And at that point, I certainly didn't want to do an advice column at that point. I wanted to continue doing music, and I just wasn't inspired to do it anymore. And then so once I stopped doing that, I stopped doing the column. And about a year ago, a friend of mine asked me, well, whatever happened to that columnist? And I was like, you know, I just don't want to do it. And, you know, it just wasn't the right time. And mentally, I wasn't there. And, you know, it was going to take an awful lot of, you know, time outside of that. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do as far as a musician is concerned. And, you know, all this other stuff. And, you know, she just kept on just like, I really think that the world needs to hear this and they need to understand, you know, that, you know, there is something else to you other than you singing, and you really need to, you know, continue doing the column. And, after a while, I just kept, you know, just hearing her voice in my head, just yada, 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 yada. So I just, you know what, let me see what I can do. Let me see what I can do. So I jumped on a couple of magazines and offered up my services, and, you know, free of charge, you know, of course, at first, because I was still trying to get my chops going. And then, I got with Melinda, you know, the beautiful Melinda Santiago, my manager, and just happened to have a connection at Vibe, and she initiated the conversation. Hey, you really need to listen to this, read this guy's column, you know, that were on MySpace at the time, and Sheen magazine, and what was the other magazine that it was in? I forget what other magazine it was in. But yeah, the two magazines that they were in initially, so they read those and was like, you know, this is some amazing writing, and this guy really is awesome, and we would like for him to come along to the Vibe family. And of course, you know, when she said, "Hey, Vibe wants to put your columns in the online magazine," what are you saying? You know, I said, "You had me at Vibe, man." You know, I was ready to rock and roll then. So. And the rest is history, you know. So Melinda, you know, initiated that whole getting it to Vibe, but, you know, it was really just an awesome ride from 2007 until this point. And we have nothing but just, you know, a good time over there. Vibe has been an absolute dream to work with. And, you know, I just hope that we can continue doing this and it becomes even bigger and even better.
Let's get a little personal. What does Princey like to do when he's not recording in the studio? Just to relax, chill, have fun. What do you like to do?
Ooh, because it's so often, I mean, it's so rare that I do have an opportunity to do something outside of music. You know what? I have this passion for fashion, man. You know, I know that rhymed, and I totally didn't mean for it to do. But, and that's just the lyricism. But I'm sort of like this fashionista thingy, whatever this thing is I'm hearing on TV now. I love putting outfits together. I love, you know, just you know, style. And of course, I don't have the body for a lot of this stuff that I see, you know, with the long torso and all this other stuff. Like, that's not me. I'm 5'8". It's you know, me being a model, I'm not going to happen. But I see the vision, you know, and I see a lot of the things that, you know, TV and television, and I just make it applicable to what urban style is, you know, because we, you know, black men ain't going to wear no tight, you know, those super tight Italian cut, you know, jeans. But you take that look, and then you apply it to some jeans that, you know, fit you right, and, you know, because we're just different. We're just built differently. You know, we got package, you know, down there. You know, we got things that need to breathe down there. So, so you know, you take the concept, you take the look, you know, and then just make that, you know, the style, and I love doing that. That's been, you know, my new little thing that I do, you know, for the last couple of years. And if you notice, if you go to my Instagram page, and it's Michael Keith 112 on Instagram, you can see a lot of the fashion do's and don'ts, you know, that I've had over the, you know, the course of the year or whatever, you know, because I guess I'm my own, you know, guinea pig. So, yeah, I just put the outfits together, put them on Instagram, and, you know, let people wail away at me. All you say is that, yeah, that's hot. No, that's not. You know, so.
I follow you on Instagram. You got some philo going on. I ain't going to front.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. You know, I'm very simple. I'm very simple. I like clean lines. I like, you know, just bold statements with your outfits, but I'm not one that does the, you know, the bright colors and things of this nature. I'm more of a neutral color down to the, you know, to the blacks and the blues, the dark blues, you know, very, you know, rich colors and things of this nature, man. And, you know, but I'm somewhat daring, you know, but I really like comfortability, but I also like, you know, for my clothes to make a statement without making a statement. You know, subtlety is the name of the game when it comes to me. So I just really like that, you know, to be a reflection, you know, of how I'm feeling and how my mindset is and things in nature. I try to make it as applicable as I can when it comes to fashion. So some is fun, a lot of more sophisticated, on the more sophisticated, older, you know, grown and sexy kind of, you know, vibe and stuff. And, you know, I really can't describe it. It's indescribable. You know, it's just more of just, hey, what I feel like putting on. But, you know, just know that it's going to be clean lines. It's not going to be, you know, a Gordon Gartrell from the Cosby Show back in the day. It ain't going to be nothing crazy like that. But it's definitely going to make a statement. You know, when I walk in the room, it's definitely going to make a statement. So, and I love doing that. And you know, that's like my main hobby that I do right now. Outside of that, I read, you know, I read as much as I possibly can. It is of the utmost importance that, you know, we maintain a level of education being out in this industry. And because the crazy thing is like the music industry would love for their artists to just remain artists and be dumb, you know, and people are just amazed when I tell them that, but it's honestly like we are so much more than the sum of our parts. And when we do speak about things that are culturally what's going on and current events and things of this nature and being opinionated about it, you know, it kind of turns some people off. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, we didn't ask you to be a politician, man. We wanted you to be a musician. Well, why the hell did you ask me about all these social issues then? You know, like those are the, Are we not part of Americana? Are we not part of the world? Are we not, you know, privy to having, you know, a say so in how the world operates? And who better else to, you know, to verbalize these concerns that we have than someone, you know, who has a platform in order to make that happen? So that's my mindset. And I just, you know, without being too preachy and things of this nature, you know, if somebody asks me my opinion about a situation, I'll give it, but, you know, I'm just, you know, someone that wants to know what's going on around himself and, you know, in the world that we live in. And, you know, that's what I do. I read and, you know, I gain knowledge and, you know, I just, try to spread the knowledge as much as I possibly can. And, but that's, you know, that's another thing that I do. I cook. I actually, my intent was to be a culinary artist. You know, I wanted to go to, you know, go to school for culinary arts. I had every intent on being, said if 112 was not going to work out, I was going to be Chef Princey. You know, just, yeah, with the little Chef Boyardee hat and everything, man. I was going to be the dude, you know, because, I mean, I love food. I can't eat food, you know, but being in this industry, you got to be, you know, you gotta lick lettuce leaves and stuff like that, you know, the main thing. But you know, but I love food. My grandmother and my mother taught me how, you know, it was accidental actually. It was more of like them telling me to come in and stir this and put this in that and you know, watch that oven, turn that chicken over. It was all those lessons that I learned. And then as I got older, I was like, man, I can cook, you know.
Right. So,
you know, it was just like an acquired skill that I got over time that I didn't even know I was learning. And, you know, and it just became second nature to me. And, you know, like I would just prepare food for, like, you know, someone I was, you know, young lady I was dating or trying to, you know, just have over for dinner or whatnot. And yeah, I get to cooking and, she, you know, she's like, oh, my God, you can cook. I'm like, duh, you know.
Right.
Not knowing that that's not something that, you know, every, you know, men do, you know, on the regular. I mean, who would have thunk it? But, yeah, that's one of the things that I do as well. And, you know, I also, you know, I love jumping in front of that Xbox, man, and just wheeling on them aliens. You know, I'm not a Madden man. I really do the Madden.
Not a Madden team.
No. I'm more of a, you know, like, you know, fight the aliens and you know, all that fantasy stuff. You know, I'm into all that. I like stories. I like Yeah, I like storylines, things of that nature, you know, so.
Okay. Before I let you go, you know, I'm so enjoying talking to you, but I know, you know, you guys are busy over there, but can you share with everyone your most precious life lesson that you've learned so far?
I think the most precious and the greatest lesson that I learned was that life is not fair. And I learned this at a very young age. And how I learned it was my mother was taking us to school one day, and I think we witnessed a young woman being, well, she was already dead when we saw her, but she was laying in the yard, and she was face down, and you know, and we were just stunned and amazed that this woman was, you know, that she was a dead body in front of us, and we were just traumatized by it, and you know, we were like, "Mama, why? You know, that ain't fair." And you know, all this and all that, man. And she just looked back at us and told us, like, life is not fair. You know, there's going to be instances where you feel that, you know, it, for righteousness sake, it's supposed to go one way, but it does not always happen that way. And it was our firm foundation that we had in God and in family that we did not blame God. We did not blame family. It was how life was. Like, certain things in life, you know, there's something that's inexplainable, you know, unexplainable, but you just have to keep on going. And the lesson that I got from that was just, you know, you have to continue to keep going, you know, regardless. There are things that have had transpired in my life that I would categorize emphatically as not being fair. However, that does not mean anything to that next person, you know, and there have been times that 112 has been on the lesser side of that, where, you know, we've had people that are, you know, family members that passed away, that we missed funerals, that, you know, babies being born, and, you know, things that, you know, you would just deem unfair, but you still got to keep going. And I think that lesson helped me to get past all that, because honestly, without that lesson, I don't know how I would be able to function, you know, as well as I have been able to function without her and her guidance, you know, and letting us know that, hey, life is not fair, man. And that was the one thing that we can do all this, that we can create in our minds the greatest album that the world has ever heard in our lives. They, you know, the masses can hear it and absolutely hate the album. Life ain't fair. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you have to keep on going. And you know, is it fair that, you know, we got looked over? Is it fair that people are still questioning whether or not 112 is that quintessential R&B group for this generation? Is it fair? Is it fair? Like, who's to say? You know, but what I will say is, you know, life, in my opinion, is not about fair. It's just life. It is. You know, and it's not good nor bad, or, you know, right or left or up or down, it just is. And we got to live it, you know. So that's one of the greatest lessons I learned.
Share with everyone how they can get in contact with you. I know you guys are doing some tour dates. How can everyone keep up with everything that you're doing in 112?
Well, everyone can follow me, if you will, on Twitter. And the Twitter handle is Michael Keith, MICHAELKEITH, 112. It is the same name on Instagram. I'm not on the other, you know, I'm on Facebook, but I'm rarely, if ever, you know, responding to that. But those are ways that you can definitely follow 112 for show dates, and or if I have lupus events that are coming up that I'm supporting or advocating for, or just anything, like, you would get me on those better. The S Firm at Twitter, Melinda Santiago on Twitter and on Instagram. The official 112 Twitter page is Room 112. You can definitely shout out to my homegirl, Kate Bookman, that she runs that for us, and she's such a delight and such a wonderful person, and I don't know what I would do as far as the social media is concerned without her. So those you can find out, you know, touring dates, and of course you can follow Q Parker 112 on Twitter. You can follow Deron Jones Music, and you'll get all that information as well. So once again, it's Michael Keith 112 on Twitter and on Instagram. You can find me. You can find dates, and we're just doing what we can do.
Michael Keith, it was a pleasure speaking with you tonight, and I do appreciate again everything that you're doing with Lupus, and I wish you guys much success. 112. I cannot wait to get this album. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So thank you so much. We're gonna do our best. And we won't let y'all down. This album means so much to us, and I'm so glad that we have finally decided to, you know, put another album out and move forward. And it's nothing like progress and progressiveness, you know, to make a man feel, you know, like he's worth a darn. So I just wanted to thank you, Si, again for allowing me to be on, you know, your show, and it is a blessing. It's an absolute pleasure. We finally get to do it. You know, it's been a couple of times. You know, we had to schedule this nature, but I'm just glad that we had the opportunity to speak. And you are an absolute blessing, you know, and I appreciate you, and thank you so much.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Sci-Fi Radio Show tonight. My guest, Michael Keith. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview just as much as I did. By all means, follow Michael Keith 112 at Michael Keith 112 on Twitter and Instagram to stay up on all the 112 news. And you can also follow myself at I Am Sci on Twitter and Instagram, and like the Sci Effect on Facebook. Until next time, continue to spread peace, love, and good news, baby.